And welcome to another edition of the Data Topics podcast to explore the more fuzzy concepts within the world of data analytics. Today's session and the two next ones will dive in deeper into the subject of AI ethics and related concepts. And with me in the room, I have Tim.
Hi, I'm Tim. I'm a machine learning engineer at DataRoots, which means I implement AI solutions for our clients. My background is in research psychology. And so I'm naturally interested in the human side of things in AI projects. And so particularly interested to learn more from the people here today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rob Heyman. I'm the coordinator of the Knowledge Center Data and Society, or Data and Maatschappij, as we like to call it in Dutch. My background is social sciences. I've been researching how Facebook uses your personal data. That was 5 years ago. And now we're researching how we can pragmatically operationalize ethics within AI and data-driven projects.
Awesome. Welcome. Virginie?
Hi, I'm Virginie. I'm head of DataRoots Research. So within DataRoots Research, we work on innovative projects. And so obviously, ethics, explainable AI are very relevant topics, and we are there to stay up to date and make sure that we implement them at our customers.
Great to have you. Hi, Jan.
Hello. Good afternoon or good morning, everyone. I am Jan. I work at also the Knowledge Center as my colleague Rob, who is my boss at the Knowledge Center. So I shall be very careful in what I say. Now, and I also work at KU Leuven Center for IT and IP Law, CITIP, where I focus on the legal aspects of AI and especially the questions of responsibility and liability. And yeah, it's great being here. So yeah.
Great having you. And I think we have a quite diverse bunch, so should give some interesting insights. Maybe as a starting question, why are we talking about ethics so much in the context of AI? I mean, we've had, you know, there's many other solutions that have hit the market. I don't think we've talked as much about digital AI, digital ethics, sorry. So why the interest in AI ethics?
Well, according to me, we talk so much about AI ethics because we talked so much about AI and how it's going to change society. If you keep on telling everyone AI is going to change society totally and we should be very worried about that and we will not recognize our society 10 years from now because everything will be automated, well, then people start to worry. Do we need a new legal framework? Do we need certain safeguards? Are these engineers, whom we only know from big American companies that made some mistakes in the past, to say it very nicely. So people are very worried. And then they said, well, we need something additional. And the additional thing we need is AI ethics. It's going to make sure that all the AI developments are going to stick within the societal values we deem important. And that's not the only thing. AI is also big in Asia. China is really a front runner. And they share different moral values. So there's also this political component where you see that the West is trying to position itself against other global powers. And we need to have very clear values, ethical values, for example, to say this is how we are going to do our AI production and development. And it will be different from the AI productions and products being developed in other nations.
You see, also see it, the legal framework is actually also departing from ethical elements. We can discuss this later, but we have several ethical requirements to develop trustworthy AI, human oversight, accountability. And you see it, all the legal frameworks that are being adopted right now, that they do rely on it and depart from these fundamental core values. So it's an ethical, legal, societal altogether, making it very interesting to cover.
But for me, it comes from the problems that we already see because we don't have any legal framework right now. I don't think it comes from a societal awareness. I think the societal awareness came afterwards, after we discovered that when we build an AI to recruit people, it does a lot of discrimination. When we build an AI who does check for criminal neighborhoods, there is a lot of discrimination. I think it comes from these use cases where we were not really careful about what we were doing. And then we realized that, actually, there are a lot of ethical problems using just the data like that and throwing it at an algorithm and just seeing what happens. I think that also is,
That's the notion of perpetuating bias, but what they claim, I mean, the fact that when you program it, the biases that are in the data sets that you use or in the minds of the developers, let's say, that those get implemented, but in something that's going to last a while and is going to be used, but it's an automation, so in a broad structure.
Even worse, like reinforced, I think, because those models, they learn and then you train them again on the data that they generated, and it's like kind of a reinforcement effect. So you reinforce a bias somehow.
Okay, but so then we have two interesting perspectives. We have one, AI ethics, because we want to also protect the values and somehow make sure that AI respects those. And on the other side, we have indeed tackling some of the things we've learned from the first cases where we did see things go maybe a bit south, not as expected. Quite some interesting cases that occurred in the last years in this respect. I mean, one interesting one is Compass in the US was an algorithm that was used to try and predict whether offenders would reoffend, and where indeed the false positives were significantly larger in the African American population, and the false negatives was more present in the Caucasian American population. So that's definitely things we want to avoid. Rob, an interesting thing you mentioned, it's also positioning our values. How important is culture in ethics?
Really important. You have this really nice research from MIT where they did the trolley experiment again with self-driving cars. And the question was there, should the self-driving car, which can no longer brake, run over one elder person or to save three younger people? And when you do that in Europe, almost everyone would say, well, definitely run over the elderly. That's the thing you need to do. While if you reapply this, I think in Japan, it's the other way around. They would say, well, you really need to sacrifice the children out of respect for the elderly. And so what they learned with these experiments, which were randomly generated and then shared amongst different cultures, is that indeed per culture you have different moral priorities or target groups you want to protect more, or, well, just want to treat differently. So yeah, these cultural things are really different.
Yeah, we've seen it also. The Knowledge Center was involved in the UNESCO recommendations on AI. And there as well, you see that, yeah, different countries have their own values, making sometimes at moments very challenging to come to a consensus. But in the end, it was made and we reached a consensus. But for me, who's not involved in policy, it was really a strange exercise, because you need to find a balance and so. So culture is definitely something that is important.
But then ethics is it a group of values? Is that the way I...
Yeah, let's try to define that. I think it's really important here to say that ethics looks a lot like artificial intelligence. The less you know about it, the more it seems to be able to solve and the more it can change the world. Now, you know, as people from data roots, that people sometimes have way too high expectations, both about things that can go well and things that can go really bad. The less you know, the worse these projections usually are. And it's the same with ethics. One of the things I need to do the most is really tone down the expectations with regard to ethical assessments, almost by saying, look, since you seem to be a rational person, you're going to be able to do your own ethical assessment. And most people don't believe this. I guess that's different from AI. That's the only difference. We cannot teach everyone to do AI yet, but I think we're moving into that direction. But it's the same. The more undefined you leave ethics, the bigger it becomes in everyone's heads. So going back to your definition, one of the reasons this is the case is because ethics, just like AI, started as an academic or philosophical discipline. It's really about asking this question: in AI, can we simulate human intelligence? And then in ethics, it's really the study about moral values. And you can go really deep in that, like the questions we now had: are moral values cultural? Another one is, what is the meta level? What should we consider in order to define these moral values? And then you have had all these Western philosophers defining systems, like universalism with Kant, utilitarianism, and so on. And these are, for me, all different flavors of ethics. So just like with AI, you should ask what methods and flavor are you using when you talk about ethics. It could be that it's just a symbolic approach in AI, and it's the same for ethics. The European dominant flavor for AI is, for example, principlism. We really want to stick to our Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And if you look at the high-level AI high-level expert group on AI, you see that they have these principles that sound a lot like and incorporate human rights the way we know them in Europe. But there are different flavors. And I think for us, when we talk to clients or people who look for advice, we first ask them, have you ever considered what type of ethical solution you want? Just like you would ask in AI, do you need machine learning? Do you need something more simple? Is it going to be symbolical, supervised, reinforced learning? All these things are questions you need to articulate together with your clients. The problem is, I think the AI ethics field is not that evolved yet that we clarify these questions beforehand. So returning to your question, what is ethics then? When you look at AI ethics, at least, it seems to be that it shares one goal. It's trying to guide AI projects very abstractly, like the European Union does, or on the ground. It tries to guide these projects towards being societally well-defined without having any negative influences and maximizing positive influences. But within this broad definition, you have so many different flavors again. You could look at SDGs, you can look at the principlistic approach of the AI high-level expert group, and there are a ton of other options as well.
Yeah, okay. So then kind of confirms why we have it on this show. So if there's so many flavors to ethics, that it also means that we cannot just define one framework, one ethical framework that is, I mean, especially if it's culturally influenced, that we will never get to one ethical framework that can be implemented worldwide.
Luckily not. No. No, really luckily not. I mean, again, use the AI metaphor. It would be really sad for your line of business as well if you say, from now on, you have to solve everything using neural networks. It's a toolbox, and each tool has its pros and cons, and you really need to consider what are the things most important to me. You could use the big AI high-level expert group framework, for example, as a starting point, and then it will say, look, if you do the assessment, you fail at transparency. And then you're going to start looking, I hope, for transparency methods that fit with your AI solution. If you're using neural networks, well, that's going to be a problem if you want to do explainability and traceability. But there are still other things you could do when you further look into the different options that are still left.
Indeed, because this, if I may, the high-level expert group developed this ALTAI assessment list to which Rob refers, which contains seven key requirements to achieve trustworthy ethical AI. So it's basically a checklist that companies, AI developers, policymakers can use to ensure that their AI is compliant with these kind of trustworthy elements. One should also know, remember, of course, that ethics is nice, but ethics is not binding as such. The law is binding. So I think we should also make a difference between what is ethical AI and what is the law, what is required by the law, because in the end, that is also, I think, as important as the ethical touch that we try to give. So I think it's the focus has a lot been on ethics, but from my view, it's very broad, often conceived very broad, the ethical also including law. But for me, these are, yeah, two different things. They can collapse, they can align, they can be aligned, but they can also be well different. The law may be different than ethical values, and this makes it also a difficult element in the discussion.
Even further, more difficult to implement it, because this is a checklist and it's very often still high level, not really defined in terms of technical checklist. What should we actually implement in which case? And it's a bit left to the goodwill of the engineer at the moment, at least. Like if you don't care, if you don't want to implement any ethical checks, well, you don't need to. And it's also often because it's too vague or too broad, we don't even know what to implement. And it's just a bit like left open to, but that's the case right now.
Mm-hmm. I really like your comment, Virginie, because earlier on we were asking the question, why so much attention to AI ethics? And there's two papers. One is called The Uselessness of AI Ethics. And there, this person is actually saying, well, we have this danger focusing so much on abstract AI ethics guidelines. There are a lot of them. There's a Nature article outlining, I think, more than 100 guidelines on AI ethics. And this person is saying we should be careful because it's a smokescreen and it's costing us a lot of money. A lot of resources are going towards the definition of abstract AI ethics frameworks. And he asks in the end, will they change anything? Because if you look at them, you can actually not see how you need to operationalize them. There are no technical standards. There's not really a clear path how you should use it in one type and on the other one. That's why I also looked at another paper, which I invite everyone to read. It's only 6 pages long, and it's called A Mulching Proposal, subtitled Analyzing and Improving an Algorithmic System for Turning the Elderly into High Nutrient Slurry. And what they did is they followed one ethical framework, the Fair, Accountable, and Transparent framework, and they were able to comply with it entirely. And so the conclusion is we should all solve the problem with, if you have too many elderly in your society by turning them into high nutrient slurry. No, that's not the case. But what it proves is actually that these abstract frameworks are really, really dangerous because you can even apply them when you have bad applications in mind. So that's the flavor of ethics we at the Knowledge Center are really much opposed to. We are still a fan of abstract frameworks, but only if you can translate them in more clear standards that make sense. And I guess that's the gist of it, why we can never have a big framework. In the end, it depends on the people on the floor to really reflect by themselves and say, does this standard still make sense to our case? We even have it with the GDPR, which is also one of those things we expect a lot from. But sometimes the text was not able to participate all the strange and new things we are doing with personal data. And we will find some discrepancies or contradictions. And the only way to solve them is to think by ourselves. And you can never expect that from an ethical or even a legal framework.
But it's complementary elements. So you have thinking about what does ethics mean for us. It's translating it into behavior. And then it's also putting a legal framework around that to safeguard the chalk line.
I think so. And I like legal frameworks because they try to be a lot more concrete already with what is allowed, what is not allowed. The definitions are also very strict. And that's where we really need people with legal training to tell us, is this concept mapping with the thing we are doing or not? Is it applicable, the scope of the law, for example?
Yeah, this is to make it concrete. As I mentioned at the Knowledge Center, we try to make it as hands-on concrete possible. So what we did, we this Altai assessment list, very ethical, we translated it. We looked into the legal frameworks and we examined, okay, requirement one, can we find it already somewhere in the law? Where not? What are potential gaps? Requirement two, what are the gaps? So we did this translating exercise and we found that there's already a lot of legal frameworks that do apply. So when people say we need a new AI law, this is my personal opinion, I'm not convinced because we may need it, but we need to find gaps that we can tackle. It's maybe not always a solution. It comes from a new framework, a legal framework, because it can solve some problems, but it creates a lot more potentially from a legal perspective. So it's finding this balance. And I think that the gap analysis, very hands-on, is very important. And also, I think it becomes clear, interdisciplinarity is also something that is on the ground, but really important for projects. And I assume that that with DataRoots, you have this approach on as variety as possible.
But then maybe we don't need a legal framework where we already have a lot of it, but don't we need tests? Like if you look at the car, it was developed like long time ago. And at the beginning, it was very dangerous. engine, right? You know, and then they develop like the seat belts, and then you have a lot of tests, and even like if you want to put your kid in the car, you have all kind of tests that you need to run the car into a wall. It has to resist a lot of things. Shouldn't we have something like that also for AI then?
Yeah, we should. But the question is, do we already not have it to a certain extent? Because we have the GDPR that applies. We do have consumer protection frameworks that do apply. We do have so many frameworks that do apply. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against new AI law, if you can call it like this, because it's coming. It's already there. If you like look at the EU, a lot is already happening. Last week, proposals were done on liability and AI. So it is really happening. But what I sometimes think, that we should first find real the problems. What are the gaps in frameworks, for example, that should be addressed? And I think like with a target approach, I think you can achieve also a lot. So it's not an end-end. It's not an or story, but it's an end-end. But we also make sure that we have the gaps that we need to tackle with a legal framework instead of like developing new broad frameworks that would create new problems.
So industry-specific legal frameworks already cover a lot of these challenges of using AI in industry in a way.
Yeah, I think, for example, product safety legislation, medical device regulations, there's already for toys, for their machinery directives. So a lot is there already. It's about finding it and then complementing it with new frameworks. But again, it's my own opinion, of course. Sometimes there's too many expectations from the law. So I think it's really an end-to-end story.
And how are we finding those gaps?
By contacting lawyers to conduct their research and finding the gaps. No, I think, for example, when you talk to liability, it's my field of expertise, and probably we can discuss ours on it, but we won't. But for example, the product liability directive, this is an applicable framework to defective products. Well, for example, up until last week, it was unsure whether software is considered a product or not. If it's not a product, then it does not fall within that directive. And it was very unclear, but still, it's such an important question, a simple question to further determine whether software is a product. Now, last week, the revised proposal was issued, and it was said software is a product. It fills a gap. It will have a lot of other consequences, but at least there a gap has been found and has been tackled.
But indeed, I think the legislation or regulation should be kind of the boundaries of the extremes, let's say, where as a society we don't want things to go. Within that playing field, there's a lot of nuances, and I think that's more on an organizational level and probably more on a team level to define what are.
But also enforcement, because I think Rob can say more about it. If you have a framework, a legal framework, for example, the GDPR, let's say, or the AI Act, it's all about you enforcing it. If you do not have competence or capacities to enforce it, what is the use? I think like the framework is one thing, but you should make sure that it can be enforced. And the GDPR, but correct me wrong, if I'm wrong, the GDPR has shown it's not that enforced as we want it to be enforced. So without enforcement, yeah.
No, enforcement is still difficult. Like with the GDPR, everyone first needs to understand what it means for their company. You have a DPO now, a data protection officer, who has been appointed by most companies now that process personal data. But this person still needs money to do trainings and explain everyone what the GDPR exactly means. If we then move to ethics, well, we don't have this ethics person as a job definition yet, not even in the more data-driven companies. There's also, in most companies, not really a list of, let's say, a top three ethical values this company is contributing to. Some are experimenting, of course, with ESGs and SDGs. The next step would then be to enforce them, looking at KPIs. How much did we actually move towards a certain direction? Can we measure this? Do we need to reevaluate whether we're going in the right direction? So I think Jan is really right. The challenge there is enforcement, but first clarifying what these ethics mean.
Can I challenge that a bit? I think with GDPR, I think part, of course, is enforcement and indeed following up. A large part of what, and that's that at least I think was successful, was making people more aware and conscious of the importance of privacy. I think everybody, technical or non-technical, today is aware of GDPR in an organization. And when new projects are launched, they ask the question, but from a privacy perspective, what does this mean? And I think it's maybe even more powerful that it becomes an attention point by design, that people really adopt it as a concern without it necessarily being a stick, you know, that somehow it's more of a carrot and it says, we want to be conscious about this. How do we tackle this? And you still have the stick as kind of a last resort, but that there's still a willingness to pay attention to privacy and sensitivity. And I hope with AI somewhere, we go in the same direction. Yes, you will have legislation and regulation that tries to set the boundaries, but that somehow people become also more conscious that AI also has potential flaws if you don't pay attention to it. And it's not a panacea, it's not a solve-all solution, and that you need to be conscious about this and adopt this in throughout your process.
So should we use then like the same sensitive information as where it was defined in GDPR to define like ethical sensitive information, like what you wouldn't want to discriminate against?
But in the for example, the legal framework, the AI Act contains a risk-based approach, and I think this is the right way to go. Prohibiting certain AI systems, high-risk AI systems have to comply with additional requirements, transparency requirements, but also data governance, data quality. So there are some elements already, and I think that there is a societal reflex, because like all of us are working in AI already for a long time. But I wrote my first article on self-driving vehicles in 2013. But back then, no one was interested. No one. It was future and science fiction. But the last years, you see that it's becoming in every legal domain. Yeah, research is going on this AI impact on consciousness. On. So it's just indeed moving. So it's a matter of law, but also of mentality. And I think there. Yeah, we are, at least in the legal branches, we see a lot of interest in these AI-related issues.
But that's a bit like what Virginie mentioned, I think, where there's been some prominent cases that have triggered awareness that there should be more attention paid to it. Huh?
Well, there are two ways to deal with it. I think Virginie already gave one good one. It's looking at the data you're using. I would say these are case-based things. The problem with AI is that it's an any technology. You can almost apply it to any application area. And that's really tough because the people who apply it are not always experts in the area you're applying it to. So it takes a while before you understand all the ethical considerations of this area. I mean, I'm getting used to AI in healthcare. I never researched healthcare before I was part of the Knowledge Center. And there are very different ethical concerns, of course, than when you apply AI to social media platforms. So there, your cases can only work as long as you're working in the same application area. What is the other solution? You try to go more abstract. You say, what are the big abstract values we can operationalize every time? But I think that's really the challenge for AI companies right now. How can you, as a technical expert, keep in mind all these small challenges and ethical considerations when you're entering a new field? I think, in short, you shouldn't be the only responsible party, of course. Your client should be aware what these ethical considerations are. And that's what I like about AI as a technology. You talked about Compass before, And you said Compass, that's a very naughty algorithm, if you ask me, because it seems to propagate already existing societal bias. Well, but it's not a naughty algorithm, it's a naughty society. It's based on data from judges who also said it's right to be biased towards colored people. And that's funny, AI is actually surfacing these hidden values which are in the data. We never systematically put the data all together to train a system that would copy our agglomerated behavior of all these judges. And what we learned there, and it's strange that we haven't talked that much about it in the Compass case, is that these judges were wrong in the first place and not the algorithm. But everyone is blaming it on the algorithm, which makes small apart sense, because you need, of course, to be unbiased. But how do you do that in a society that creates bias? Because that's what I like about AI. It's actually, for me, not reinforcing the values of the designers. It's also reinforcing the values of our society, but it's making them more transparent. So I'm quite happy there that everyone working in AI application areas is gathering a lot of data, and they are actually surfacing these biases. And we don't have an ethical framework for that yet. If you see these biases, should you flag them? Should you tell someone like BDAB, who does job matching in Flanders? They are using AI as well. They're seeing how skewed the job market is right now, how much it's discriminating against certain groups, and they don't know what to do with all these insights. Well, they do. They're trying to publish them. But this is very dangerous because they have one role, and it's efficiently matching job seekers to people who provide jobs. But now all of a sudden they have information about how biased our society is. So yeah, that's challenging as well.
And it's like you say, it's the society, the judges, but probably not only the judges, but also the policemen that brought only these people, and because they were only looking to these neighborhoods, it goes like, it's very difficult to just like point at something. It's like a trigger of a lot of things together. So very difficult to change also, I think.
I think that's a very interesting statement. It's indeed, it's a bit the mirror of the world. But then in, and also I think in legislation or in ethics, do we want to reinforce that mirror, or do we want to challenge it and reflect upon it? But there, I think we touch also on a bit of a second challenge is the fact that, even sometimes for the developers, it's not always 100% clear how, an algorithm gets to a decision. The compass, developers said to continue on that example, probably did not know exact what parameters were considered to give a recommendation. They probably mostly compared previous decisions to recommendations made by the algorithm and used that as a baseline. So isn't that black boxiness of especially in deep learning not also a big challenge?
It seems to be a big challenge. But that's when you look at AI as this isolated module where you didn't first talk about an objective function or the target you want to achieve with your system, how you want to move the needle towards a certain direction. And these are political and ethical questions to start with. Amazon, for example, which is now in Poland, for example, keeping track of how well you're doing. And if you're not doing well, you're going to get out. Well, they're going to give you 3 warnings, if I'm not mistaken, and then you just have to leave. Like that, they know what they're doing. They're optimizing their factory to be as efficient as possible, but they're not creating an environment where people should feel safe and be sure that they can sometimes slack when they're not feeling well. The same for Uber algorithms and Deliveroo algorithms. They're not designed for safety. People really have to bike hard to get your food in the front of your door within a certain time limit. And these things are not providing, promoting safety for the moment. And I think, however the algorithm works, it doesn't really matter that much if you can ask the question, what are you optimizing for? So even there, the black boxiness, it's sometimes an excuse, I agree, in some cases. But in most of the cases, just retranslating whatever you're optimizing for into a bigger societal example, like, well, I want your food to be delivered as soon as possible. It makes sense as a business case, I know. But have I thought about the byproducts and how I'm going to deal with bike safety? And there the answer is no, they never considered it.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point. So algorithms, they typically optimize something, whatever you give them as an optimization challenge, of course. And thinking and being more conscious of that question that you ask will influence what the model then does. So that's your point, is to think about what are the questions we want to ask of it, and does that how can we integrate our values, or also what we some of the nuances or some of the constraints we want to put to it, are those embedded?
Which is not easy, multi-objective algorithms.
I think it's very tough. Also, again, you need to know the full context, right? We help with some cards on our website. We have the card, the tarot cards of tech. They are not even AI specific, but they ask questions like, what would happen if all of a sudden the entire world starts using your product? Can you consider a few perverse effects when this happens? Another one is, can you imagine what happens to groups who are already almost, who are at the fringes of society? I'm talking about asylum seekers, the jobless. What happens when they start using your thing? And so I think it's 12 or 18 cards, and these really help a lot already. What happens when someone misuses your system? And you can use them as some inspiration, but you're right, yeah, it's really difficult to predict all these things. But yeah, there we can go back to Jan's risk-based approach. I think as a company, you have to prove that you've taken into consideration the most obvious things. And then you can at least show, well, we looked at this list of questions and we tried to consider everything. And here's some consolation about AI ethics, I think. It's a technology, and we learn from the history of technology that we can never predict how users are going to eventually use or reuse and misuse your system. If we could do that, we would have solved a lot of problems already. So that's a bit of consolation. You can never underestimate human creativity or stupidity. And that means doing constant reassessments, or at least saying, well, we try to consider all the possible things. And if you can show that, like in the GDPR.
Or in the AI Act. It's also imposing record-keeping requirements and all these documentation requirements to exactly show that you did it as good as possible. This is the aim. And also closely related, of course, is that from a liability perspective, of course, we see the crashes of self-driving cars and so on. So there's also the moment there's a crash with such a vehicle, it is in the media, it's often cited as you see, it's not working. But of course, it does work. We see the negatives, but there are also many benefits out of it. If you still see how many crashes with normal vehicles happen, well, yeah, then self-driving vehicles do have their benefits as well. So I think it's also about image creation and making sure that we have the good tone as well. We see this especially in liability cases, I think.
But to extend to that, because especially with liability, it intrinsically means responsibility. Somebody is responsible for whatever could happen. But I would personally not be super confident to be responsible for something where, well, the inner workings are not 100% clear. So I would somehow challenge, the explainability, and I know we're maybe not there yet, but I think it's a key point in the puzzle to better control what are we taking into account. Is that in line with the things we want to do? The checklist is, I think, for the time being, a good alternative, but I would personally not be comfortable until I understand at least which of the parameters have been taken into account and how it influences the end decision.
But when it's a human, you also don't know all the exactly parameters that have been taken into account. So
when I go to the doctor and he's got RX photos and so on, he's using probably AI to detect some things. I'm not going to question this because, yeah, you just trust. Yeah, it's about trust. And also with humans, I understand the point, Virginie. It's sometimes you just believe because it's better, right?
Yeah, but to take example, you mentioned the car crash because that's always very visible. But the difference is, I think, with the car, it's programmed. So a programmer kind of put that decision in the car. So you need to make a decision at some point on what you somehow program in. Whereas with a human, yeah, you go to you need to go to driving class and you need to pass an exam. And that is considered enough for you to be a responsible young driver, but it's the fact that there you don't need to consciously. Nobody at the driving school is going to tell you when you need to choose between three young people and an elderly. What do you do?
I really like your question. We should probably involve that. I mean, if you ask self-driving cars to discriminate against certain people if you cannot brake, we should definitely ask this during a driver's exam as well. I really like it. Why are we asking these questions of self-driving cars, but not of humans? I mean, all the accidents by now have largely happened by humans with cars. But we never ask these people, are you biased towards a certain group? Are you going to, well, if you can, run over these people first? And
But in that regard, I think also the notion of self-driving car is a bit misleading, because still you, at the moment, you still need to intervene as a human. So following the legal frameworks, you as a human are in all times responsible still for whatever happens with the vehicle. So if you would make any decision, it's up to the human. Eh? So we're not there yet that the car can make any decision. The law requires human control. As long as this requirement is there, yeah, there's no problem. You can just find a human responsible. But I think it was, I don't know which company there was. I think Mercedes, I forgot who it was. But they were asked, as a car producer, yeah, what would you do? And I think in 2017, they said, we would always protect the ones inside of the vehicle, regardless Mercedes, of which is...
Mercedes explicitly made that.
So we will always protect the ones inside of the vehicle. But this is a bit far going, because you basically say, yeah, well, in case your vehicle has to decide, yeah, you commit murder is a bit harsh, but yeah, you kill someone and you know it in advance. So this is a very strange reasoning. But it's also about, from a legal liability perspective, it's also about like being right in notions. And self-driving vehicles, for example, I read it a lot, a self-driving car caused an accident. But causality is also a legal requirement. What is the role of the person in the car? What is the role of the pedestrian? You could well be that the pedestrian also committed a fault, for example. So it's about being clear about what we can expect from AI, and especially what we cannot yet expect from AI. I think this is also the clarification that may be important as well in this regard.
Yeah, and then about the explainability part, you mentioned, I think for models or algorithms where we cannot say this is the reasoning behind it, we're going to need something else as a control mechanism, right? You cannot do traceability and auditability. But you can still say, well, if it's something we cannot explain, we should at least make sure that people who feel they were misjudged or something, or the system took the wrong decision, that we have some extra things in place to counter negative effects. I'm here thinking about Facebook's censoring algorithms, for example. If you have a really nice ad campaign and you're a museum, you have the risk of showing some nude pictures or paintings rather, and your entire campaign is taken down automatically. Well, I'm not sure whether it's also always automatically. Sometimes these are low-wage countries where people work and actually see the image without any context and then say, yeah, this contains a and so you need to censor it.
We'll put bleeps.
Thank you for beeping me. I hope it's automatically that you have that at data roots. But the point is, it's missing context. And now people sometimes lose their campaign for 2 weeks. They lose their entire Facebook page because it's blocked by Facebook automatically. And this is a really good example where you could say automation, regardless whether it's explainable or not, is creating an unfair balance. If you can censor someone for 2 weeks in just 1 second notice, you should also put in place means to arbitrate or say this is not the right decision that are equally quick. Otherwise, you're unfairly creating a power imbalance, which happened in Australia with robo taxes and robo debt, a program where algorithms were used to automatically assess how much debt you had to the Australian government. And it worked really quickly. It, in fact, I don't know how many people automatically, and it sent them automatically a letter stating you have so much debt. And in some cases, this was right, but in most cases, this was wrong. And it caused a lot of damage because people were not as easily able to audit all this information that went into the system. And you're again creating this unfair imbalance. So despite the algorithm being explainable or not, you could already have predicted that if we take automatic decisions that are really important to people, human verification is a really important factor. But I think my car has a few algorithms in it, like it can detect when I'm not properly driving in my lane. And that's a good human out of the loop example. I might be slacking, talking too much, yelling at my children in the back seats, and that's why I start swerving. And then it's good that my car gives me these small signals, like shaking the wheel, say, pay attention to the road, because the first thing you're doing is driving. So I think there, I wouldn't mind not knowing how it works as long as it keeps on doing it.
Yeah, and even monitoring your eyes to see if you're still paying attention to the road.
Yeah.
Maybe to conclude, because we're touching the end of this episode. We started on ethical AI. You already mentioned that Europe, the EU, typically calls it trustworthy AI. You also have responsible AI. There's different words out there. As a final question, what would be your best word or most appropriate word to use in this context?
I would not use responsible AI because it makes the link with liability. I would say, yeah, I think trustworthy AI still, yeah, makes sense because it's a bit broader. And also, like, as a lawyer, of course, the legal framework is already building upon the notion of trustworthy AI. So I would go for trustworthy AI. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine would be ethics as a service. Consider ethics like AI as a tool you can use if you know where you're going to. If you don't know where you're going to, be very careful because you'll never know where you're going to end up.
I was also going to say trustworthy because it also is a fluffy context, like ethics, you know, like it's based on your moral value that you trust something. So I think it's the right word for an ethical AI.
May I just intervene? I think trustworthy AI is a really bad word in some contexts. I'm sorry. Yeah, it really is. You shouldn't trust AI all the time. Actually, you need healthy distrust as well. It's like, I don't trust everyone who's trying to sell me something, and it's called healthy distrust.
But that is also part of the trustworthy AI.
Physicians also, when they're using AI, are trained to say, well, look, there are some weaknesses. You shouldn't trust this AI all the time. So,
but the reason why I refer to trustworthy AI is also because it's broader than the ethical aspect. I think it also includes the legal, societal aspects, and especially the legal aspects, which is not considered in ethical AI, I think. But you are right. It's all about also being critical and also about what is possible and what is not possible.
I'm actually smirking because the article I read where I got this question from, they had the same debate about, you know, trustworthy. Do we really want to trust a tool? And at some point, is it not a tool, so you don't trust it per se? But I do like the other side saying, you know, it's bigger than maybe ethics. Maybe also, and it's indeed also a fuzzy topic. So,
isn't it like two characteristic of humans that we are trying to put on an algorithm anyway?
That's actually a very nice summary. And on that bombshell, I propose we conclude this session. I'm very much looking forward to deep dive more on some of the elements we've touched on today. So I think indeed, ethics is also about moral values. It's about guidelines. It's about thinking about what we want as an optimal outcome, optimal behavior of an AI solution. But then, of course, there needs to be control. There needs to be a framework in place. And to be comfortable with that control framework, you also need explainability to get better understanding of where things could go. So that's what we will be zooming in more on in the next episode. So very much looking forward to that. Thank you all very much for joining. It was great having you. And talk to you all soon.